to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Inauguration Day. The last 8 years of the Bush administration are officially over. The Bushes are on the aircraft going back to Texas, wherever they're going, and good riddance. We were watching the inauguration this morning, and a lot of it was happening right at 12 noon Central Time when I joined Alex Jones on his show. And apparently, we had some tech glitches back then. It turned out that everybody was sending Twitter messages, and there were streaming videos coming out of Washington, D.C., and the whole Internet in the United States was just getting just log jammed. And so that's kind of a little bit why we were having these problems. Obviously, the glitches are fixed now. We're live doing the radio show. The webcam is running, and our phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Okay, so Obama is now in. We've had the coronation, as some people have described it. I want to tell you, you know, Barack should have low-keyed this. I mean, he's coming in at a time when our country is in serious, serious trouble. And he mentioned that in his inauguration speech. But I think they should have, like, really been kind of low-key about this thing, because Barack Obama's already got a tremendous advantage, if you think about it. He is the successor to the worst president in the history of the United States. Barack Obama just has to sit and do absolutely nothing to be seen as a tremendous improvement over the previous administration. Of course, we know he's not going to sit there and do nothing. It remains to be seen just what he will do. But his biggest problem right now is the economy. And the economy, everybody knows, was destroyed by the previous administration, handing out tax credits to companies so they could take high-paying American jobs and send them to other countries. And then they stand around wondering why all of a sudden Americans aren't able to pay their bills anymore. So Barack has those two advantages, and he probably should have just gone with those. But instead, we have got this huge, it's a sales push. We're watching the TV networks just anoint this guy before America as the harbinger of change and improvement. And I remember watching along the parade route, they had the cameras just showing the faces of the adoring, worshipful masses. And after a while, I began to realize this is a classic case of oversold expectations. And I got to tell you, with all these people, they have been sold that Obama is going to do so many things. If he is not walking on water by the end of the week and raising the dead, everybody's going to be disappointed. It's been oversold what he's going to be able to accomplish in office with the realities of the current economy and other situations. Now, nobody has a real good head count on the crowd in Washington, D.C. It was huge. They were talking about 2 million people. Some of the more glowing estimates had it up to 5 million. If so, that would put it ahead of the Pope's visit to Mexico City in 1990, when about 4 million people showed up to get a look at His Holiness. And two things stood out during the inauguration and the parade. Mostly during the parade. First of all, the brand new presidential limo. And I don't care if it's got a Cadillac symbol on it. Just looking at the way it's put together, it is obviously a tank. And they've been showing it on History Channel and Science Channel, everything. Yes, this car can withstand everything. And it just reminds us all that we have a government that is very much afraid of its people. And that point was hammered home. Looking along the parade route, they had the people, the voters, the taxpayers, were behind these very tall, sturdy barricades. Not just the sawhorse type. These things were up to people's chest. Heavy steel locked together, and they're pushed back on the sidewalk. And then in front of them was this phalanx of these uniformed and Kevlared guards that was just, during the long shots down the street, it looked like a solid front. That's how many of them there were. And, of course, the car and the procession went down the middle so everybody can wave at them. And you know those soldiers in the Kevlar, those officers, whatever they are standing there, the guards, they could not possibly stop a real intentional attack upon Washington, D.C. or upon the president. Incoming missile, incoming airplane, incoming bomb, what have you. They couldn't do a thing about it. They were there for one reason and one reason and only, and that was to keep the crowds appropriately cowed and fearful. And I have to tell you, when you take off the rose-colored glasses about this being an inauguration and a new presidency, and you look at all the armor and all the security surrounding the event, it just reminds you that the government is terrified of the American people. And it's one thing when it was Bush and Cheney in those armored limousines, because you knew what they'd done, and they had a reasonable reason to be that scared. But Barack's the new boy in town, and he's behind the same security, and you have to wonder, what's going on? Why is he that afraid of the public? Anyway, I went over to the whitehouse.gov website earlier today just to see if anything was up there. You know, it's obviously been switched over to the new administration. There are no executive orders listed there, no proclamations. It's really just getting started, and it'll probably take a few days for some of these things to show up there. There's a blog. There's an official White House blogger who is putting out information. And there was a little place where you can type in your email address to get news updates direct from the White House, which, since I run a news website and I do a radio show, I figured, okay, I'll sign up for that. And after I put in all the information, it comes back and there's a big banner across the website. Thank you for your submission. And I don't know, I'm looking at that word submission, and I'm getting a very, very, very strange feeling. Then we move on to Barack Obama's speech after he repeated the oath with one minor slip-up, I might add. And Obama's talking about, we're entering an era of responsibility. A recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world. Okay. So apparently Barack Obama feels that hundreds of millions of Americans who, over their entire lifetimes, and certainly over the last 8 years, wake up every morning, go to work, we come home, we care for our families, we obey the laws, and until the economy was sabotaged by the previous administration, we paid our taxes and we paid our bills, and we're not responsible people? Because that's the way it came across to me. He is talking about a new era of responsibility. It sounds to me like our president doesn't think Americans have been responsible up until this point. Then Obama goes on to say, we'll all have to learn not to spend what we do not need to spend. And I'm sorry, but it's been the government who, together with the Federal Reserve, just prints up more money to spend whenever it wants to. For, well, just picking one example out of recent news stories, to buy more bombs to send to Israel to drop on brown people. Now, we, the people of the United States, are living within our means. And that's not easy to do with the government taking half of everything that we make. It's the government that is overspending recklessly, especially in the last 6 months with the bailouts. And then they dare criticize us, and in some cases punish us, because we can't come up with the cash they decided should be spent on our behalf. Reminds me of the old story about a farmer who's got a horse and a cart, and he keeps loading up the cart and loading up the cart more and more and more and more until it's so heavy the horse can't move it. And the farmer, instead of lightening the cart, starts whipping the horse. That's what's going on here. The government is spending recklessly out of control, and they're getting ready to start flogging the American people so we'll come up with a few more pennies. The message is very simple. You will have to make do with less so that the government can have more, mostly to pay for wars, mostly to pay for the out-of-control debt that has come in from the previous administration. So Barack's next thing is the call to volunteerism. And this was launched with this video. We commented on it yesterday about all these celebrities saying, I pledge that I will do this in my neighborhood, and I pledge I will help with that, and I pledge. And it all sounds really very, very good. And I believe in volunteerism. My wife and I volunteer for some charities out here on Oahu, like the Local Computers for Kids program. We've talked about that many times on the air here. We volunteer for a lot of other stuff. In fact, next month I'm going to a local school for their career day to talk about film work and stuff like that. Anyway, we're going to take a break here. We're going to stop, maybe get your phone calls, have a few words from our sponsors. We're going to come back and talk about why the volunteerism project is a flawed concept. We'll be right back.
is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about Obama's call for new volunteerism. Apparently, this is a program he is going to manage directly from within the White House itself. It's very much being promoted within a lot of governmental organizations. And I think what it is, it's no secret that Barack Obama likes to draw comparisons between himself and President John F. Kennedy. And this volunteerism call is definitely Obama's attempt to link himself to John F. Kennedy's ask not what you can do for your country, or ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, which was the call for volunteerism that JFK came into office with, which led to the creation of the Peace Corps, which had some good sides and some bad sides. We won't go into that right now. So this is Obama's attempting to basically borrow that little piece of historical legitimacy for himself. But there are two problems with the current call to volunteerism. First of all, a lot of people, I'm one of them, are going to see this as little more than a device or a scam to transfer functions of government normally paid for by our taxes onto American volunteers so that more of our tax dollars can go to war and Wall Street. They're talking about yet another round of banking bailouts on your tab. So, you know, we, meaning the United States government, in the last few months, has spent more on the bailout of Wall Street and the banks than we spent on all of the wars in our entire history. That's the scale of the spending that is going on right now. So government can't keep on spending money on social services, so they're going to try and get us to step up, and after paying our taxes, after signing that 1040 and giving the government, you know, anywhere between one-third and one-half of what we've earned the last year, then now they want us to go out and do the job that government used to do for that tax money. And a lot of people are going to say, why should I be doing that? You're taking so much money from me. Why should I also be basically turned into slave labor, which is, you know, what it really amounts to, is we'll take your money, but you got to take care of yourself. And if we're going to take care of ourselves, if we're going to be fixing our own roads and taking care of our own elderly and repainting our own walls and in the schools and all the rest of that, then what do we even need a government for at all, is the real bottom line. And the other reason I think this volunteerism issue is going to fail is because Obama keeps using the word responsibility. And as I said before the break, he is implying that we're not responsible now. That for the last 8 years, going to work, paying our bills, paying our taxes, raising our family the best that we can, obeying the law, somehow that does not make us responsible. Some stepping in to do the government's job for us, that's the new definition of responsibility. And this from a guy who's given every indication that he is not going to investigate and charge those men and women who are responsible for the crimes of the last 8 years. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, lying us into the war in Iraq, lying us into the war in Afghanistan. Where's the sense of responsibility there if you're not going to hold these people to account? Because you can't have it both ways. You cannot have a responsible people without a responsible government. A nation inherits the morality of the people at the top. And if you, Barack Obama, allow the crimes of the last 8 years to go unpunished, do not expect and do not dare to demand that we, the people, show more responsibility than you yourself are. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Mike in California. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I've been listening to your show for about a couple of weeks. I'm the one that sent you the email about the Bay Area cop thing.
Yes.
I just wanted to say hello. But the comment I had was about the inauguration, what you were talking about earlier, and To me, I voted for Obama, but to me, the whole buildup of this man is just, you know, I mean, it's, you know, they're basically trying to build this man up into something I don't think he can even do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And if you go anywhere, like my wife and I just went to Chicago for a family thing, and you walk through that airport and they're selling CDs and T-shirts. And, I mean, it's amazing just to see how much this man is being built up. And it's almost as if he's being built up so much that the left will never even question what he's going to do, frankly.
Well, as I was saying,
that's what I'm disturbed about, because there's a lot of changes that need to be made, and I think that he's just going to be allowed to do carte blanche, and they're just going to go along with it pretty much, and not even question or criticize. That's my opinion, but
could very well be trying to sort of invest him with this invulnerability or this presumption of presidential infallibility the way the popes do. He's probably going to need it. They're already saying that somewhere down the road, especially as the economy continues to deteriorate, he's going to be making some very unpopular decisions, and I think they're trying to pre-sell America that you don't dare criticize the president. And, of course, that's not what America is about.
No, not really.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks an awful lot for the phone call. We got to let you go here. We're going to switch over to Henry in Oregon. Aloha, Henry. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Henry, apparently the technical glitches got to him. So getting back to, talking about Barack Obama. Now, we were mentioning the economy. That is obviously the single biggest problem that Barack Obama has inherited from the preceding administration, and it's a very, very difficult one. Today, inauguration day, the Dow plunged 332 points, down into the 7,000s again. Remember, we talked about that psychological barrier, where as long as it was above 8,000, people said, well, I guess we're going to be okay. But if it gets into 7,000 for a while, I think you're going to start seeing some panic selling. Now, maybe the plunge protection team just left with President Bush, or they haven't come to an agreement with Barack Obama's administration, or just maybe this is a vote of no confidence by Wall Street, which I remember when President Bush was elected, Wall Street just went wild. They thought, oh, fine times are coming. So, again, we're already seeing more dark clouds about the economy. We're hearing that along with Spain and Greece losing their AAA sovereign credit ratings, now we're hearing that Great Britain is on the verge of losing theirs. We already know that Ireland's in trouble. We are hearing that the United States government has been exerting political pressure to convince the rating agencies not to touch America's sovereign credit rating. And this is not just a case of public relations. That sovereign credit rating directly impacts how much it costs governments to borrow money from other sources. You lose that AAA rating, those interest rates go way, way up, and the problems become much more dire than they already are. So, I think this idea of trying to transfer some of the government functions onto the people, I don't think it's going to stick. Volunteerism, unless they're truly committed for philosophical reasons, volunteers tend to fade away very quickly. When you sell volunteerism as a fashion statement, as they are doing with this celebrity video, you'll get a lot of people showing up, and then they'll run out of enthusiasm very, very quickly. That's the way volunteerism is. I've worked with volunteer organizations enough to see it. The ones who are already there are the ones who are going to stay. The ones you just drag in with an ad campaign, they're there for a couple of weeks. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll be talking to Henry from Oregon on the phone. Until then, we'll stay tuned. I'm sorry, I'm a little flustered. It's been a busy day. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Their planes with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit go down in Gaza tonight.
And welcome back to our show here. We're going to go right back to the phones. We're going to talk with Henry in Oregon. Aloha, Henry. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Hey, I heard you on the Alex Jones show today. You did great. Sorry about the phone problem you had, but no, it's okay. But you know what? It is really cool because I'm
The joys of live broadcasting. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Okay,
the joys of
No, no, that's okay. It's but what it comes down to is, you know what? You or nor Alex do not want to ask for money. You don't want to do that. We should be sitting. I mean, we got $5. You know, we got $5 in our pocket, you know. Put it in an envelope and send it. You guys are saving our freedom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I understand where Alex is coming from, because he's really put a huge capital investment into his systems. Oh, well, not to the same extent. And I'm very reluctant to ask for money. I'm like that because, I've been doing this for 15 years, and for the first 10, I just paid for it out of my own pocket because the purpose and the agenda was to get the stuff out there where people could see it. But, you know, Alex is right. You reach a point where the cost of the operation, you can't just pay for it out of your pocket anymore. It's not, certainly not tax deductible or anything like that. The IRS considers this a hobby. Or did up until we formed the LLC. But, we have to ask for money. I'm just a little bit more low-key about it. So
no, I know that. That's why I called to show if people are listening or whatever, is don't make these people ask. This is for our freedom. These people, you and other people. Sorry, I got the phone call. I got phone problems, too. But anyways, I just wanted to let people know that, you know, come on, don't make these people ask. They're fighting for our freedom. They're putting their life on the line. They're doing a lot of things. And I'm going to send you both money and Alex, maybe $10, but come on, we got $10.
Every little bit helps. Every little bit
helps.
Yeah.
And so that's really all. And can I share one little small thing with you? Do you,
sure.
Before I go, and then I'll hang
sure.
up now. But, hey, do you know the band The Who?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Do you know, My Wife, that song? Anyway, my son,
yes.
He's really cool, and I'll hang up right out. I'll keep this short, I promise. But he sends me an email. He lives with me. He's the fourth year of college, and he comes to me and goes, man, what did I go to school for? I didn't learn nothing. But we'll save that for another time. But he sent me a thing, email today. He lives with me. We don't email back and forth because he lives with me. But he sent me this thing that says, gonna buy a tank and an aeroplane. That's all he said. So I thought that was kind of cool. So pretty funny. Hey, Mike, thanks for everything. I'll send you a couple bucks. And everybody out there, this is for our freedom. Don't make the Mike and Alex Jones and other people on GCN Network beg for your money. They're fighting for our freedom. They're working hard. And send them the couple of bucks, whatever you have, do it. And I love you, Mike, and I'll go now, okay?
Well, thank you very much for that call, Henry. And I will certainly tell Alex that you were saying that. He'll be gratified to hear that because it is. It gets, you know, we hate to ask right now because we know all of you guys are struggling. You're losing your homes and stuff. And, you know, it's very hard to ask for money. And because the economy is really bad, very little is coming in and so forth. Anyway, we got to go. Callers are piling onto the lines right now. Thank you very much, Henry. We're going to switch to Ron in Indiana. Aloha, Ron. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Oh, I just, you know, you guys are kind of independent on the internet, and I know that like a News Corp and Fox News and things like that are basically a foreign-owned entity, and they're kind of monopolizing some of our news media in this country, and I just wonder what your thoughts were, the Australian sentiment. When I talk to a lot of our soldiers, and my son is one, and in my neighborhood there's several, and they said the Australian soldiers they run into just don't like Americans very well. And I just wonder what your sentiments are as far as them being able to own so much news media and in this country. And then when like News Corp, and Fox News, they call it American News, but it's really a foreign-based corporation. And then they want to knock people off the internet and monopolize broadcasting. I wonder what your thoughts are upon that foreign-owned entity being able to have so much control in our news media. Based on also the sentiments of their people, not really pro-American.
Well, I've had a chance to interact with a lot of people from Australia through the film industry, not the military, And the feeling I got was that the Australians were smart enough to recognize that the American people are not the same thing as the American government. And so I never had a problem with any of them. They're very, very nice people, but they were very outspoken in their criticism of what the American government was doing. Now, mind you, this was like, I'm talking like 10, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, that I had a chance to do this. So I don't know what the current situation is right now. As far as the news organizations, I don't think the fact that Fox News is owned by a foreigner is as much a factor as simply that all of our news organizations are owned by large corporations who have interests in other companies. It's like when Disney comes in and buys ABC Television. From then on, expect that ABC Television is always going to give good reviews to Disney movies. Okay, that's just the way the business works. We used to have laws in this country that prevented large conglomerates of media in order to preserve that independence of reporting, that objectivity of opinion, and a diversity of political views within the marketplace. And starting back with I think it was either Reagan or the Elder Bush presidency, all of a sudden these laws that forbid one company from owning too much media in any one marketplace, they were rescinded and they were thrown out and they were bartered away as, if you support me in the coming campaign, I'll take the chains off and you can start buying up media left and right. And of course, during the Elder Bush presidency, we saw the emergence of the Clear Channel Corporation, which bought up practically all the radio in the United States.
That also happened under Colin Powell's son, I believe. When he was
head of the FCC at the time.
Right, and
Michael
he invented some rules for Fox, basically, mm-hmm. to be able to break into more news media on the, you know, papers, radio. If you notice, Fox is also starting to take over the partner up into a lot of your radio broadcasting, mm-hmm. and a lot of memos. If you look on the internet, you know, people are suggesting that they're wanting to eliminate some of this internet.
You know. Of course they do. Of course they do. It's competition. It's embarrassing. Okay.
And but I mean, they're a foreknown operation, and why should they be able to take the freedom away from the
okay, well, Chris,
people.
Let me respond to that. Chris, let me respond to that because we're almost at the end of the segment. I'm going to have to let you go. But, yeah, the media corporations want to go back to the days of the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s when the media would broadcast and the Americans would receive and accept it and believe it. And the media corporations understand that the alternative media like Genesis, the Internet, the blogs, we have basically broken the monopoly on the flow of information in our society. And more to the point, we exist to actually be the watchdog on government and media abuse, and we're pointing out where the media lies to the public when they're not acting in what we would consider the best public interest. And so, yeah, obviously these corporations, they don't want to change their ways because then they're no longer useful to the powers that be. So the only other alternative is, yeah, they're trying to find some way to shut us all down or to buy up the most prominent ones with donations or outright investment and ownership so they can say, all right, keep on doing what you're doing, but this subject and this subject are now off limits. Chris, thanks for the call. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with – oh, I'm sorry. That was Ron I just said goodbye to. We'll be talking with Chris in Tampa, Florida, right after these words from our sponsors.
Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right to the phones. We're talking to Chris in Tampa, Florida. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, same as you. The issue of whether Obama took the oath of office properly. That was mentioned on Alex's show, where a caller posted a YouTube video called entitled "Did Obama Take the Oath Properly?" And this is according to Article 2 of the Constitution that he did not utter the oath properly. And I only bring this up because I just noticed YouTube posted an article just about an hour and a half ago where they actually misquoted Chief Justice John Roberts, who administered the oath. And even though Obama was given two chances at it, he flubbed it. And Yahoo News misquotes John Roberts, as John Roberts, Justice Roberts, did administer the oath properly, but Yahoo News misquotes Justice Roberts by putting the word faithfully at the end of the sentence to probably make it a little less conspicuous. Yahoo News says, quote, "that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully," end quote. And you can see clearly on the YouTube video where the quote says that, that I will faithfully execute the office of the President to the United States.
Okay, well, Chris, let me just wade in here a little bit. And I understand what you're saying, and there are a lot of people who want to do a letter of the law and intent and everything like this. But, you know, the presidency does not hinge on whether he recites the oath exactly proper word for word. The fact of the matter is, I mean, he's just become president. He's probably thinking to himself, oh, man, what do I do now? I'm really in trouble. I've got to make the thing work. And you've got all these people, millions of people looking at you live, millions more over TV. And, you know, the guy's under a little bit of pressure. He might flub a line or two. And frankly, to be very honest, I think if you go back and you look at the oath taking for most of our presidents since we've been able to record these things, you'll find that it's actually quite often under the pressure of the circumstances, they'll flub a word or two. And I think it's a trivial issue, and we can poke fun at it, but I don't think it's anything to take seriously. There really are far more pressing concerns, such as how he's going to handle the economy. So thank you very much for the phone call, and we're going to move on because we're running out of time here. I did want to cover a little bit more about the Israel-Gaza situation. We are getting reports that Israeli warplanes have again attacked Gaza, just dropping, you know, more bombs. They're saying they were attacking a rocket launching pad. Now, a rocket launching pad for those pop bottle rockets that Hamas has been using, basically it's a stick stuck in the dirt. And from high up in a jet airplane, you know, you could be looking at rakes and brooms and shovels, you know, teepeed together just in a work crew. And we already know from earlier in the war that when Israel thought they were bombing a truck full of rockets, it turned out to be a truck full of welding gear. So this seems to be a very, very reckless thing for Israel to be doing when both sides have officially declared a ceasefire. And now it seems like, you know, somebody somewhere in the chain of command is really trying to kick this back up again. Not everybody wanted this peace to happen, I don't think. Meanwhile, as we were noticing in the news break, or was being reported in the news break, the Gazans are coming home to see what is left of their home, and it's not much. We know the human cost of Gaza. It's well over 1,000. The number continues to rise as they dig more bodies out from under the rubble. But we are beginning to realize that 50,000 Gazans no longer have their homes. It's estimated that 400,000 Gazans do not have access to drinkable running water. They're having to go to water trucks with bottles just to get drinking water. It's almost a scorched earth policy, and in a lot of ways, it reminds us of the end of the 2006 war in Lebanon, what they called the 33-day war, where after, you know, when a ceasefire was called in those last few hours before the ceasefire went into effect, Israel just carpet bombed southern Lebanon with cluster bombs, which have these little tiny munitions that fly off, and if they don't explode immediately, they are left there on the ground, in the ground, under the ground for 2, 3, 4 years. Every once in a while, somebody in Lebanon, still to this very day, they'll step on one, or a farm animal will step on one with horrendous injuries and loss of life. And it seems like that same strategy has been repeated in Gaza. We know from photographs, including a set that I'm probably going to get up on the site later on today, that Israel was using white phosphorus incendiary bombs on hospitals, schools, mosques, residential blocks, was an attempt not just to kill Hamas militants or Hamas police officers, it was an attempt to start horrendous fires to destroy whole neighborhoods. Now, there is a report, unconfirmed at this time, we're trying to confirm it, that large tent cities are being set up on the Egyptian side of the border at Rafah, and that Israel is intending to, quote-unquote, temporarily relocate the now homeless Gazans into this tent city on the other side of the border. And it remains to be seen if once they are there, it'll simply be declared a refugee camp and they will not be allowed to leave, and Israel will start building new settlements inside Gaza. And I mention this because way back when Ariel Sharon was still around, and he made this deal with the West, with the United States, if the U.S., if the Western powers would turn a blind eye to the building of more illegal settlements in the West Bank, in complete defiance of UN Security Council Resolution 242, Israel would pull out of Gaza completely and say, it's all yours, we're taking our Israelis out, it's all yours, you can take care of it. And when that happened, I predicted that once Israel's settlements in the West Bank were facts on the ground, once they were built and occupied and it was too late to take them back, that Israel would find some way to go back into Gaza and occupy it and take it back over. And the reason for that is very simple. It's wonderful beachfront property. It's worth a lot of money if it's redeveloped. There's natural gas off the coastline there that Israel's already economically controlling, but they're supposed to be sharing that money with the Palestinians. In short, Israel wants Gaza, but they don't want the Gazans. And I think this story about the tent cities in Egypt, if it turns out to be true, will be the first step in a forced mass expulsion of Palestinians from their homes in Gaza, which is, you know, this is like the second time in a row because they're in Gaza because they were expelled from their original homes in what is now Israel. So it looks like Israel is moving forward with this mass deportation situation. And again, they're complete defiance of the United Nations to be doing this. So we're going to close today with kind of an off-the-wall story. I've been meaning to report on this for a few days now, and it keeps getting left behind and left behind, so I'm going to get to it today. Apparently, NASA technicians have developed a system. They applied some technology that was developed for something else, and they've come up with a machine that is able to detect the beginnings of cataracts in the eye before they become obvious to any other means of detection. And this gives a much greater opportunity to halt the process of cataracts, to take early corrective action, to perhaps reduce the deterioration to vision that results from cataracts. And I bring this up not because, you know, I'm an eye doctor or married to an optometrist anymore or anything like that, but this illustrates a point I've made before, that the civilian space program is the source of new technology from which new products can be created, creating new jobs in our economy. Now, obviously, this is not going to be a big seller here, but somewhere, somebody's going to set up a company to take this technology and turn it into a medical product. They're going to be hiring American citizens, we hope, to go in and make this product, which nobody else in the world knows how to make yet, and we will sell it overseas, and we will bring money into the country. And this is why I am a very strong supporter of a continuing commitment to space research and exploration under civilian control in order to spur new technologies, because we're never going to catch up in manufacturing with the other countries that already know how to make what we know how to make, and we let it go over the last 30 years. We have to come up with something new that only we, the United States, knows how to make, that the rest of the world is going to want, and we will make it and sell it to them and create high-paying jobs and reverse the deterioration of our economy. So that's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time. More news, more Obama follies, as it were, more phone calls. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive safely, and aloha, America.